I'd like to invite our next speaker, James Glover from Texas A&M.
Howdy, everybody. My name is James Glover. I'm from Texas A&M University in College Station. I'm one of the PhD students there. And first off, I'd like to say that it's been about 2 years since I've had the opportunity to be here, and it's my privilege to be here to talk with you today. And what I'd like to talk to you about today is the transmission of cotton and boll rotting bacteria by the Verde plant bug. Now, I've got a lot to talk about, so I want to go ahead and say thanks to a lot of our Texas AgriLife research employees and our summer interns for helping me get a lot of the work done. If it wouldn't have been for some of these folks coming in on a Saturday in the hot cotton patch at about 6 in the morning, this work simply would never have gotten done. So thanks to those folks. Especially thanks to the growers for allowing me access to their farms to collect the insects to do the work. And one person that's not on here that I've just thought about is my main academic advisor, Dr. Mike Brewer. If it wasn't for his mentoring, I simply wouldn't be here today. We'd like to say thank you to the Texas State Support Committee and Cotton Incorporated and Cotton Inc. Core Program for financial assistance. In today's talk, I'd like to start off with a little background, and then we'll take a look at our species complex, some signs of common plant injury, and then we'll take a look at the field vector assays from both years, and we'll finish up with a short summary and some management implications. So, here in these highlighted regions here, around 1999 is when these non-traditional cotton boll rot pathogens started to pop up on the scene, i.e. these insect-derived boll rots. And ever since then, these have continued to be a limiting factor in cotton, especially in these producing regions. Now, I'm not going to bore you with the boll weevil and the BT story because you already know it. But what I do want to call your attention to is that we have transitioned from a complex of insect pests that are chewers to piercers and suckers. And these are some of our major players over here, this Verde plant bug and this stink bug. Now, what makes these incredibly difficult pests is, one, is it's very difficult to identify insect injury. So oftentimes when we found these green bowls, we would open these up several weeks after being fed upon, and we would see these varying signs of boll rot, either here where we have no rot or where the locules are rotted. And then when we followed these same bowls to harvest, we saw symptoms ranging from no damage to these that you see over here on the right-hand side where we have discolored lint and hard lock, per se. Now, we have a species complex that's made up of plant bugs and stink bugs, and we want to know who's a vector. So we have this pre- and early bloom period, this squaring period that's pretty much dominated by the cotton flea hopper. And this is followed by this early to mid-blooming period where we have the Verde plant bug who shows up in the field. And we know from the literature this animal is able to eat on large candlesticks up into small bowls. And then followed by that is this mid to late blooming period where we have the largest array of boll ages in the field, and subsequently where we see the entire pest complex present. So now that we've talked about what insects are in our system and which fruiting periods are most susceptible, we really wanted to take a closer look at the plant's response as a result of insect injury. So here I've got some pictures of some bowls. One of these bowls came from a field that was infested with the Verde plant bug. The other came from a field that was infested with stink bugs. And when you take a look at these, you see these cat facing, as we heard it called earlier, these puncture marks or these feeding sites. When you take a look at these, there's simply no difference in these. A puncture site is a puncture site. They all look the same, really, from species to species. Now, when we follow these same green bowls and we crack them, this is what we were seeing. We were seeing these different signs of rot. And we know from the literature that at least one species from the Eustachys and the Nazar complex are competent vectors of boll rot pathogens. And so if you've missed the question, I would like you to figure out who's the Verde plant bug damage and who's the stink bug damage pictured above. And so this is what we have. These are the insects that are responsible for the pictures above. And what made this so difficult for us is that the feeding signs are the same, the boll rot looks the same, and our lab has a real interest in field crops and in insects, and especially how these diseases, if vectored, if they have any potential impact in cotton production systems. So that leads us to our objectives. First thing we wanted to figure out, is the Verde plant bug a competent vector? And this simply means, is it able to acquire the disease and is it able to transmit it as it subsequently feeds? Does it cause disease, yes or no? And our objective two, is that disease retained? Can it transmit to multiple bowls? And if you look at the picture below, these are the bowl ages that we use, 5, 6, 7, and 8 day old bowls. And we really wanted to know where on that retention spectrum the Verde plant bug lies. So this is really where it all got started at. Brewer et al. In 2013 had made a note of a close association between outbreak populations of Verde plant bug and the occurrence of boll rot. And that was really the catalyst for this project. So what we did, now this happened before I came on board, but in 2012 through 2014, bowls from known infested Verde plant bug fields were then green bowls were excised and then sent to our collaborator at the USDARS, Dr. Gino Medrano, for processing, where he purified and cultured the organisms of interest and then ran petri dish assays, a screening for antibiotic resistance, until we found mutated or marked strains, which were used for then subsequent experimentation. Now, along the way, this bacteria was identified with a 97% confirmation through the BLAST database with an identity of Serratia marcescens. Interestingly enough, this is a different genre of bacteria that has been identified, different than that of the stink bugs. Let's keep that in mind. Now, how we collected our insects. If you've ever seen this, it's called the KISS sampler. And depending on where you went to school at, this is either keep it simple, stupid, or keep it simple, stupid. Or keep it simple, stupid, or keep it stupid, simple. Either way, you can see how it is for me. And what it is it's a modified leaf blower that has an adjustable arm on the other side that allows the user to sample above and through the canopy at variable speeds. It inflates the suck on the opposite side and deposits the insects, right? Now, in 2016, we collected our insects from soft-dough sorghum, and then in 2017, we collected them from the various pod-filling stages in soybean. Mass collections were then put in these large organza cages, brought back to the laboratory, and then insects of interest were aspirated. And if you're not familiar with that just simply means sucking a bug into a tube. Now, from those insect collections, we had laboratory colonies that were established. In 2016, we kept them on a sterilized diet, and in 2017, for ease of use, they were reared on green beans. All of them are reared in these Tupper-made or Rubbermaid containers here, Tupperware containers. For at 28 degrees C and for a 14-day light day photo period. Now, both the sterilized diet that was used in 2016 and the green beans in 2017 were autoclaved, as well as the artificial diet in 2016 was autoclaved and sterilized. This both diets presumably providing a disease-free diet. So now to the exposure protocol. We took bacteria, plated it out to obtain 48-hour fresh cultures from which an inoculation suspension was made. And then we took autoclaved green beans, sectioned with a sterile razor blade into 3-centimeter segments. And then we soaked these green bean segments in the inoculation suspension. We cut off the edges to increase the capillary action and uptake of the pathogen. And then we took cohorts of our insects, put them inside of a glass petri dish arena, with the exposed green bean. From this point forward in the presentation, anything that you see red is the exposed or pathogen-positive insect. Okay. And then for our controls, we had the same setup, except our green beans were sectioned and soaked in sterilized DI water, or autoclaved DI water. And then they were put on clean green beans. And I'll tell you why we put them on clean green beans in a moment. This is the exposure timeline. They were put on the infected green beans for 24 hours and then put on this clean diet for 4 days, which followed by a 24-hour starvation period before they were infested. And you say, why did we put them on clean beans? Well, we wanted to make sure that there was simply no mechanical transfer of the bacteria, some sort of casual transmission. All right, now for our actual field trial, we took our no pathogen minus insects and our pathogen positive insects, and we caged them on 5-day-old bowls and 7-day-old bowls. And at the conclusion of a 24-hour feeding period, those remaining insects who survived were then aspirated and then put on clean 6-day and 8-day-old fruit. Now I want to show you what that looks like. This is all done in the field. You may ask yourself, how do you know how old the fruit was? Well, it's because we tagged the blooms at yellow blooms, so we know exactly how old they are. And then we put a small organza insect enclosure over them. This way we could restrict any non-target pest damage. And so when the time came, when the bowls were of the appropriate age, we came to those treatments, unfurled the bag, inserted a 1 ounce diet cup that contained a Verde plant bug from our colony, from the various treatments, one insect per bowl. And then at the conclusion of that 24-hour feeding period, we took a smaller organza cage in the field, put over those sacks, unfurled that, let the insect come out, aspirate that insect, and then place them on clean 6-day and 8-day-old bowls. Now, all of the bowls were processed at the USDA RS facility, where we took all the warts or galls, diseased and non-diseased lint from all of their treatments, ground them up, and then screened them and plated them on LBA and LBA amended rifampicin media. This way we can track our mutated or marked strains. Now I just want to give you a visual confirmation of what we saw. In our controls, look, there's no rot. But what you do see, there's a little bit of insect damage. Okay? But nothing compared to our treatments that were inoculated. Clear differences here. And this told us three things, right? Rift-resistant bacteria were isolated from the inoculated treatments. One, serratia marsh sessions marked with the RIF produced symptoms that were exactly what we saw in the field. Same rot. The Verde plant bug looks to be a competent vector of these boll rot pathogens. So let me take you into the data. So this is a 2017. If you look on the y-axis, we have this boll rating scale from 0 to 4. And this corresponds to the number of injured locules. And what I'd like to show you here is when you look at the no-insect treatments, very little damage. This shows us that our insect enclosures were very effective at excluding non-target pest damage. When we look at the insect minus, these are the insects that were exposed to DI green beans and our insect pathogen positive, we saw that it really didn't affect or just seemed to disrupt feeding. The disease really didn't have an effect on those who fed. We saw the same average feeding. And then when we look at 2016, we see the same trend. Now, for objective one, these are the percent plates with confirmed rot using our rifampicin amended media. Now, no surprise here, in the insect minus treatments, we don't see any disease, and that's a good thing. That really confirms that our methodology was sound, that there was no cross-contamination or mislabeling of treatment units. And then when we look at our insect positive for the pathogen, we see there's about 50% of those plates that pop positive, okay, with confirmed disease. Now, when we look at 2016, we see the same thing. No insect, no disease where we shouldn't see it, and disease where we should see it, at roughly the same, about the same, 50-55. Now, this is objective two, where we wanted to take a look at retention. Does this animal continue to harbor this disease, and for how long? So this is the same graphic we saw here before, about 50%. When we recage these on the 6-day and 8-day elbows, as you can see from the graphs here, transmission rates were very similar across all the pathogen-positive treatments. Pretty much the same, approximately 50% across the board. Now, this part we haven't replicated yet, maybe in the future. So, in summary, for objective one, RIF-resistant bacteria was only recovered in those treatments, and that's to say, we didn't see bacteria where it shouldn't have been. We only saw the rifampicin-resistant bacteria in those treatments and those insects that were exposed to it. And yes, the Verde plant bug is clearly a competent vector of these boll rot pathogens. And our objective two, retention confirmed. These are the boll ages that we looked at. And what we saw was even 24 hours, well, even, you know, after 6 days of exposure, feeding for 24 hours and then being removed to another clean bowl, these animals still obtained the ability to transmit this disease. Okay? And so what does that really mean? You know, this hemipteran insect complex is going to persist in cotton. It's our modern-day issue, modern-day problem. Like we talked about before, these are all hemipteran species. Many of these sister species, all these other plant bugs and stink bugs, they're good candidates for being vectors. And what I made mention of earlier is that the bacteria that we used for this plant bug, Verde plant bug, was different than that reported in the literature with the stink bugs. And this is just simply to show that we have a suite of insects that seems to be vectoring a suite of pathogens that manifest themselves as cotton boll rot. And lastly, what does it mean that they can transmit to multiple bowls? What does that mean to management? You know, if these insects are able, as we saw here, to transmit from bowl to bowl, that may affect how we manage these insects in the field. After an outbreak population has been detected, how long should they be allowed to persist before they're controlled? And with that, I'd like to say thank you for listening to me and open up the floor to any questions or comments.
We have time for just a quick question.
Yes, sir. Creon tidy signatus? Creon tidy signatus? It's called Creon tidy signatus. And we've got a cousin species over in Australia that's a huge pest on cotton and I think vegetable crops.
I'd like to thank your speaker. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.